Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 45, recorded Wednesday, September 19th, 2006. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on today's Travel Commons Podcast: waiting for Toomey and enjoying travel. This week, coming to you from the Renaissance Madison Hotel in downtown Seattle. Today, I'm in the midst of a big three-day triangulation, Chicago to Houston to Seattle, and hopefully sometime back home. Monday was by far the worst. I was up at 3:30 a.m. to catch the first flight, a 5:50 a.m. Continental flight from O'Hare to Houston. I worked all day and made the guy who booked the 5:50 flight by lunch, and then caught the 7 p.m. flight from Houston to Seattle. Got into Seattle at about 9:30 p.m. Central Time, 9:30 p.m. Pacific Time, 11:30 p.m. Central Time, up for 20 hours, which definitely made for a long day. I was dreading the Monday flights because they were both on Continental, an airline which I have zero status on. Continental owns Houston the same way United owns Denver and Northwest owns Detroit, so it's tough to avoid them if you're going through Houston. And indeed, my O'Hare to Houston to Seattle flight was constructed as a single flight from O'Hare to Seattle with a connection and layover in Houston. So anyway, I wasn't looking forward to flying without status, but Monday morning at 3:45 a.m., when I was printing out my boarding passes, I discovered that I had status through Northwest. A week ago, Northwest gave me guest Silver Elite status. I don't know why. It just showed up in the mail, probably because I still have 80,000 miles in the bank with them from times when I lived in Detroit and was flying through Detroit. You know, and I really didn't know where I'd get any use out of this new status. I have no current plans to fly to Detroit, Minneapolis, or Memphis. But as I've learned now, don't be an ingrate with these offers, especially when they're free. And now, here's a use. Because Northwest and Continental have frequent flyer reciprocity, I now have Continental status. I was immediately able to book seat 8C on the flight to Houston instead of seat 20E. So right there, I'm in the bonus round. But better yet, when boarding the 4.5-hour flight from Houston to Seattle, the agent stopped me as I was scanning my boarding pass and gave me a little slip of paper with seat 2E on it. It told me I'd been upgraded to first class. So Northwest's gratis elite promotion turned out to be very generous indeed. Following up, I've spoken before about how I like to use Orbitz when I'm searching for flights. I really like their fare matrix, and booking multi-carrier flights on them is just much easier than it is getting it done on any airline site. And indeed, oftentimes booking multi-city flights on a single airline is easier on Orbitz than on their own site. However, I'll tell you, I hit a real downside yesterday with them: live customer service. While many in the travel industry do a poor job of customer service, you know, Orbitz is at the bottom of the heap from my experience. Calling to change my flight home from Seattle, I got to listen to 5 minutes of a pre-recorded spiel telling me that I could check everything online when I knew that I needed to talk to a live agent. And I knew this because their website told me so when I went there first. Once connected to an agent, I told her my request, and after checking a bit, she told me she'd have to forward me onto another desk. Well, that's not a problem. I wait on hold a bit longer, another agent picks up and asks me the same account verification information the first one did, except that it's more difficult to give it to her because the voice over IP connection to what is obviously an offshore call center was horrid, absolutely horrid. The echo and the delay made it almost impossible to have a conversation. Eventually, I got the story retold. She said that she'd have to call the airlines and put me on hold. 30 minutes later, late for dinner, I just finally hung it up and called American Airlines directly myself. I had it taken care of in 45 seconds. Orbitz, tops on the web, bottoms on the phone. Something to keep in mind. Going through a TSA screening checkpoint at 5 a.m. is never a good time, let alone a 5 a.m. encounter with an overzealous screener. Monday morning in O'Hare, a TSA screener pulls out my bag from the x-ray machine, asks me to open it up. No problem, I say. I'm just trying to survive long enough to make it to the Starbucks stand for a caffeine infusion. She makes a beeline to my toiletry bag, which I'd packed on top of my clothes just so the TSA wouldn't have to go rummaging through everything. She opens up my toiletries, grabs the bottle of Echodent tooth powder, and without looking at it, holds it up and loudly says, "You can't take this on." I wait for a moment, let her bask in her triumphant find, and then ask her, "Why not? It's tooth powder. You guys announce a no solids rule overnight?" She turned the bottle around, finally looked at the label, and put it back. No apologies, no whoops, no my bad. Typical. Check out Hillary Bauman's clothing cult blog for a list of solid toiletry replacements so that you too can play fool the screener. There's a link in the show notes. The tooth powder is working well for me, as is the Tom's of Maine solid deodorant. You know, I ditched shaving cream a long time ago for just a shaving brush that I can use with hotel soap, but I'm still looking for some hair gel replacement. I cut my hair short, but it's still looking just a bit too spiky without some product in it, and I'd appreciate any suggestions. You know, in our last podcast, I guessed that all this hassle was going to impact the airline businesses as people move to liquid-enabled modes of travel, such as trains or cars. You know, the jury's still out on this one. The September 10th New York Times article I quoted in my last Travel Commons blog post claims that this shift is already taking place, though travel industry analysts say that the airline load statistics, the analysis of that just isn't clear. Anecdotally, I'm seeing way fewer jam-packed planes, and I've personally added an hour to my drive instead of fly threshold. And in Travel Commons number 23, I did a fly versus drive math analysis for a trip from Chicago to Indianapolis, a 180-mile trip, and decided that, you know, when you take into account all the time involved in a plane trip, driving to the airport, arriving early to pass through security, waiting to board, getting your rental car, 3 hours is about the break-even time. I revisited that calculus in planning a trip from Chicago to Ann Arbor, Michigan for this Thursday. That's a 250-mile trip, a bit less than 4 hours, actually, given that a good bit of it is on the racetrack, that is I-94 through Michigan. And I decided to drive it. You know, I can leave when I want. I can get there when I want. And since I can leave when I want, I'll return home Thursday night rather than staying overnight. So not only is an airline losing revenue because of these increased hassles, but also a hotel is losing a room night and a rental car company is losing a rental day. These fat hassles aren't just impacting the airlines. And finally, thanks to everyone who's pinned themselves on the Travel Commons Frapper map. Jennifer put the latest pin in earlier this week in Burlington, Kansas. Click on the link on the right-hand side of the Travel Commons website and take a look. It's kind of fun, and maybe even put in a pin of your own if you have a chance. Again, thanks to everyone who contributes their thoughts and stories, the voice of the traveler. The email address is comments@travelcommons.com, or you can post them on the website at travelcommons.com. First topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is Waiting for Toomey. Looks like a liquid ban could be with us for a while. Last week, Michael Chertoff, the head of Homeland Security, floated just such a trial balloon in an interview with USA Today. And the chairman of the congressional committee in this area, Peter King of New York, is proposing a bill to keep these restrictions in place until technology is available to detect liquid explosives, which means a lot of people are going to have to keep checking their luggage. And as we've discussed earlier, this appears to be pushing the airlines and airports' luggage handling capabilities to their breaking point. Indeed, the front page of today's USA Today that was slipped under my door here in Seattle says just that, crisis scene in luggage screening. While Peter King and folks like Michael Chertoff are saying that we need to increase security, to increase security, we need to push more luggage to be checked. We've got a TSA internal report saying that the checked luggage screening process is not all it's cracked up to be either. But anyway, you know, anybody who's checked luggage recently knows that if you've got a check, get ready for at least a 45-minute wait for your luggage. A colleague who's with me here in Seattle had just such an experience. He waited an hour for his bag. An announcement came over the PA, "We're sorry for the delay with your luggage. It's because two planes arrived simultaneously." Now wait a minute here. Two planes arriving at the same time is a problem in Seattle Airport? I mean, I can see this as a reasonable excuse in, say, Pocatello, Idaho, but Seattle? Well, at least they apologized. And at least the bag showed up. Hillary Bauman, in her post I just mentioned earlier, gives her motivation for creating her solid carry-on list. "I luckily haven't had to fly in a while, but the last time someone, a family member, convinced me to check baggage that I could have carried on, my checked bag took a 2-day trip without me to L.A. And, you know, this isn't a U.S.-only problem. I mean, I remember a bunny hop sales trip I took with a colleague through Europe. We were in a different city each day. Both of us arrived in Zurich without our luggage. Mine showed up later that night. I woke up to find it leaning against my hotel room door. My colleague, though, wasn't so lucky. His luggage always seemed to be one stop behind us, arriving just as we would leave. It became part of our cadence. Arrive at an airport, check with luggage services for the location of his bag, stop off on the way to the hotel so he could buy another pair of underwear. Indeed, his luggage began to branch out, visiting new cities without us. I remember him shouting into the phone toward the end of the trip, 'Derbyshire! What's my luggage doing in Derbyshire?'" Chris Christensen of the Amateur Traveler podcast sent in this story from his recent trip to Tanzania.
"So I traveled in this summer with 9 others in a trip with some people from my church, actually, to Tanzania. And because it was sort of a service trip, we were carrying with us more luggage than I like to take. We were definitely checking luggage on this trip. We took 20 pieces of luggage for the 10 of us, and some of them quite large because they were filled with school supplies for the kids over there that we were going to visit. We were visiting a church that was taking care of 130 orphans, predominantly from AIDS. And we also had on the way over a 7.5-hour layover in London. So most of us checked everything we could and then just dealt with our hand luggage while we went out to Windsor for a couple hours. The first problem we had happened in the San Francisco airport, although we didn't discover about it till later, and that is we didn't check in as a group. We checked in at different agents standing right next to each other, and some were told they could check the luggage all the way to the Kilimanjaro airport in Tanzania, and others were told, no, you have to check it only to Nairobi, and then you have to get it and give it to the next leg of your journey to that airline, which is Precision Air, as we were flying on British Air. And everyone who was told that they had to hand carry the luggage in Nairobi didn't have their luggage by the time we got to Tanzania. We saw it all in Nairobi. All except for one luggage. One piece of luggage we knew by the time we left London had been lost, has still never been seen again, and no payment has yet been forthcoming. They're not quite answering the emails from the person who lost that, but it could have something to do with the 10,000 pieces of luggage that have been lost since the terrorist act in London. So we went in Nairobi. We found somebody who was probably an independent contractor who helped us find all the luggage. We got all the luggage. We put it on we took it to the counter of Precision Air, but it's one of those situations where out on the tarmac, you have to reclaim your luggage, and Precision Air is probably one of the most poorly named airlines. It was an airline grossly in need of an efficiency expert. There were lots of people standing around, no particular direction. You had to go claim your luggage, and then they had to pack it in there, and our luggage just never showed up. So we were missing about 7 bags until, I think, the next morning they did manage to make it on the next flight. Fortunately, they got lost on that leg rather than the leg going to Nairobi, which only flew every other day. On the way back, I think we only lost 2 pieces of luggage. So, you know, hey, that's an improvement.
Well, there's some expectation management. We're happy for only a 10% failure rate. Thanks, Chris, for that great story. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is enjoying travel. You know, scanning my blog posts over the past 30 days, you get a sense that the travel experience has taken a turn for the worse. It's just a grind, a trial to be endured. Indeed, I was at home for 2 weeks straight over the past couple of weeks, and unlike other times, I just did not look forward to getting back on the road. But, you know, at least until I get another job, I'm going to need to find a bright side in all this. And for me, the bright side is often an unexpected discovery at the shoulder of the day. During one of my stays at the SFO Marriott, I had one of those discoveries, and this is the Bay Trail that goes through the city of Burlingame Shorebird Sanctuary. I'd always noticed the asphalt path that ran alongside the hotel, and one day, I don't know, maybe because I had eaten just a bit too much Vietnamese food in San Mateo, I felt like a bit of a walk. And you know, the sun was just beginning its final drop for the day, and so it was beginning to cool off. The trail runs along the edge of San Francisco Bay. I'll put a link to a webpage in the show notes, and I've also posted a couple of my cell phone pictures on the Travel Commons Flickr site. Well, anyhow, this part of the trail runs behind the hotel and behind a bunch of restaurants there, face backing up to the bay. It's really nicely done with benches and landscaping along the way. There are a few less than scenic points as it maybe runs through a parking lot, but on the whole, it's a nice walk. And the Shorebird Sanctuary was the best part for me. If I narrowed my focus enough, just, you know, that sort of cone of vision, all I saw were wetlands fed by a tidal slope, feeding a half dozen shorebirds. I sat on the bench, watched the birds, and in the middle of this sort of concrete asphalt collection of airports and chain restaurants and gas stations, I had just a small moment, a small sort of nature moment, one that picked me up and drove me through the rest of what was a tough week. Last month, NPR's music podcast carried a story about Peter Mulvey. They called him a modern troubadour, and it's a great story. I've got a link in the show notes and also a link to Peter's website. But here's an excerpt for you from just sort of his attitude about being on the road. And I hope putting this excerpt in my show won't get me keel-hauled into court by the nice folks at NPR.
This is the inaugural tour for my new car. My previous car was a Chevy Prism, and it just died in my driveway at 417,000 miles. I bought it new. I put all those miles on it myself. I get paid to travel and sleep in hotel rooms and fly in airports, and I play music for free.
Today I woke up in Oswego, New York, and I went downtown to get a sandwich, and there was an antique cannon, a piece of artillery, like in front of the town hall, and someone had stuck a daisy into the barrel of it. I love that.
Over the last dozen years, Mulvey figures he's driven 750,000 miles and played 2,000 gigs. And he pictures himself still doing 100-plus gigs a year until retirement age.
I will say, I'm 36, and if you're in that position where all of the life you can remember, you've been doing this thing, even if it's something that you love, you right around now, you kind of ask yourself, what did you learn? And I generally, I mean, I guess the answer that comes to me is, I don't know, leave early, travel fast and keep a clean windshield, stick to music. Music is pretty deep and pretty good for the spirit, and get some fresh air. Pack some apples.
So here's a guy whose travel schedule is definitely more grueling than mine, but he seems to be having a good time. I don't know. Maybe I need to be eating more fresh fruit. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 45. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. The bridge music on today's show is all from the PodSafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. Please check out the show notes for song titles, artists, and links to the artist's website. If you have a story, a thought, a comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or MP3 file to comments@travelcommons.com, or post them on our website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who's taken the time to send in emails, audio files, or post comments on the website. Hope you have a good week of travel. And until we talk again, thanks for stopping by at the Travel Commons.
Home alone, life is hell. Strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing ease my mind, the warm woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears